Arab countries may ratchet up the economic pressure on Syria.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson in for Steve Chiatakis. The government of Syria is facing the possibility of new economic sanctions this morning. More than 3,500 people have been killed there during months of anti-government protests. And today, the government ignored a deadline from the 21 members of the Arab League to allow international observers into the country. For more, we turn to the BBC's Jim Muir, who has been following the situation. He's with us now from Beirut, Lebanon. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the deadline has passed. No word from Syria. What happens now?
Well, unless something does happen from Syria, a kind of last minute or in fact after the last minute acceptance of the deal, the Arab League would go ahead probably Saturday, possibly Sunday, with a meeting of its economic council, which would impose sanctions on Syria. The ideas being bandied around are things like a commercial flight ban that would obviously really hit the Syrians psychologically by isolating them in terms of air contacts, also freezing dealings with the Syrian Central Bank and other institutions on the financial front, and freezing the assets of Syrian individuals in the Arab world.
And Jim, what difference does it make that these sanctions would be coming from the Arab League and not from, say, the US or Europe?
Well, of course, this is the kind of thing that was the precursor to the NATO action in Libya. So from the Damascus regime's point of view, it would be an important kind of Arab platform stacked up against it. The two steps they've gone through now, one has been the suspension of Syria's membership in the Arab League, which is like saying you don't belong to this club anymore, isolating it, and now economic sanctions, assuming they do go ahead. It does, in a way, open the way to some kind of international intervention.
The BBC's Jim Muir in Beirut, Lebanon. Thanks so much.
You're most welcome.
Well, today is Black Friday, of course, but for the world's largest retailer, Walmart, the focus is on India. The government there has just announced it'll allow foreign supermarkets into that country for the first time. And as the BBC's Nidhi Dutt reports from Mumbai, that'll give stores like Walmart access to a retail sector worth $450 billion a year.
Supporters of the move say it will increase competition and quality while reducing prices. But the move is bitterly opposed by millions of Indian mom and pop stores who fear they'll be put out of business by foreign retail giants. Damji Bhai has owned his food stall in Mumbai for 60 years. He's not too worried about losing business because he says not all his customers will be able to afford to shop at Walmart.
The rich people might go to those stores, but medium and small consumers will keep coming to me. Most Indians aren't that rich to go to big stores to shop.
But there are restrictions. The foreign stores will be permitted only in cities with a population of 1 million or more. And it might be some time before the foreign stores become a reality. Among the obstacles is India's poor rural infrastructure. Up to half of fresh produce will be lost to a slow transport system before it can be sold. In Mumbai, I'm the BBC's Nidhi Dutt for Marketplace.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed on Wall Street right now. The Dow up 28 points, about 0.2% at 11,286. The Nasdaq down 0.3%. S&P 500 up 0.1%. Bad news out of Europe this morning. Italy had a bond sale and ended up paying more money to borrow money than at any point since joining the euro.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, providing solutions to help grow and protect retirement income through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. By Indiana University's Kelley School of Business, providing a personalized approach to career advancement. Learn more at kellei.iu.edu. And by MassMutual, offering retirement and 401k plans to businesses for more than 60 years. MassMutual.com/retirestrong.
Well, if you're heading out for some Black Friday sales today and you're planning on using your credit card, you might notice something different. Instead of the clerk processing your transaction with a traditional point-of-sale device like a cash register, he or she might use a mobile device like an iPad. That trend means there are a lot of people making point-of-sale apps to run those transactions, as Stephen Nesson reports.
3 years ago, Brooklyn businessman Jason Richardson was running two wine shops and a grocery store when all of his cash register servers went down at the same time.
So I went online and I searched for a cloud point of sale. And guess what? I didn't find any.
So Richardson created a complete point of sale system that runs on a tablet computer. His app was accepted by Apple in August, and now more than 50 other retailers around the country are using it. Other mobile point-of-sale apps have also been developed.
Do I see them stealing Marketplace? If their product is good enough, potentially they can.
That's Joe Finizio. He tracks retail technology as the head of Retailer Solutions Providers Association.
However, the larger players and the traditional players in the marketplace, they're not the big players by chance.
Finizio says mobile apps still make up less than 1% of the $60 billion point-of-sale industry.
Are the applications that are running on an iPad or an Android tablet hurting the other folks? Hell no.
Big players include IBM, NCR, and Micros.
In fact, it's igniting them to create more applications for the customers and the retailers.
Dave Hoffman is the director of consumer solutions at Micros, which runs point-of-sale systems in a third of all restaurants in the U.S. He's part of a recently created department tasked with creating mobile apps.
I don't know that we're necessarily playing catch-up. The Micros software that we have that we're selling today, you know, its roots go back to late 70s, early 80s, and that's, you know, the evolution of this software is not something that starts in a day's time and all of a sudden has all the features you need.
Right now, Micros is piloting its mobile apps in restaurants in the company's hometown of Columbia, Maryland. In New York, I'm Stephen Nesson for Marketplace.
And finally, to a store in Missouri that's beating the odds in a down economy. It's called Uncle Sam's Safari Outfitters, and it sells survival food and gear. The owner says people are worried about the collapse of society, so he's had to boost his inventory of ready-to-eat meals. The good news is, according to CBS St. Louis, outside the store, civilization appears to still be intact. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Black Friday inspires a lot of strong emotions. One camp says, buy, buy, buy.
We know that consumer spending does drive growth, so why don't we embrace consumer culture?
Another preaches, don't.
These materialistic longings that we have, they impact how we feel about ourselves.
I'm Tess Viglin, the pros and cons of consumerism, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.